This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Is on JCVD's side. Yes, it is. Or at least it is when we're talking about this movie, which we're totally doing, and I'm super excited that we're talking about it. Holy crap, Cargill.
I'm so excited.
And you just can't hide it. You're trying.
I can't hide it.
It's bursting out of you like you're one of the Vollmer twins hitting the wall, man.
I'm about to lose control, and I think I like it. There.
I think it happened.
I lost control.
I think you have hit the wall like one of the Vollmer twins. You see those red splotches? That's the Vollmer twins. I am so thrilled that you guys are joining us. Welcome to Junk Food Cinema. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast. So good, it just has to be fattening. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast. So good, it just has to be fattening. And it seems like you're having deja vu, like maybe we said that before, it's because we just went back in time and said it again, because that's how quickly this shit happens when you are part of the time enforcement agency, which I don't think that's, it's the Time Enforcement Commission, the TEC. And that, of course, we're talking about time cop.
It'll be on the test.
It will be on the test for sure. We are in the throes of JCV December. I'm Brian. He is Cargill. He is someone who novelist, screenwriter, Lieutenant Megaforce, somebody who I feel like if you were going to break a time law, Cargill, it would not be for personal gain in the financial sense. I feel like you would go back in time and be the first person to see like every movie so that you could have like the first review on the internet back in the glory days. Like you would just go back in time and be like the first person to see like The Dark Knight.
Don't think I haven't thought about that. Like, you know how cool it would be to go back in time and actually see this movie in a theater? You know, I'm going to go to Skatetown, USA on opening night. An audience that thinks it's about to see a good movie rather than a great movie.
I feel like you have just confirmed what I said about it wouldn't be for personal gain, because the heights of depravity that you could think of for using a time machine was to see Skatetown, USA in a theater for the first time.
With an audience, yes.
You know what? God love you. That's great. I am behind you 100%. And if you would like to get behind us 100%, you can also you can always find our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio. You can of course follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, where you guys have really been bringing it with the conversations and the stuff you've been, you know, taking pictures of, the video stores you've been to, the movies you've been seeing. Really great stuff. Keep that coming. And of course you can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like us and you want us to continue well into the future, the long-lost future of 2004, you can always support us, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema, and for as little as $1 per episode, you will get access to bonus content that nobody else gets to hear. For $5 an episode and above, you get even more bonus content that nobody gets to hear. And we're doing, in addition to everything, I'm actually recording next week a very special commentary to go along with JCV December that I hope you guys will enjoy. And you can get that at any patron level. So if you haven't already pledged, we would highly recommend that you do that. Thank you if you have already. You are the reason that our Time Enforcement Commission is able to keep the pods on the tracks. That is actually very, very appropriate, keeping the pods on the tracks. Which, by the way, Time Cop, JCV December! Rolls along with another Peter Hyams movie, because Peter Hyams, he was responsible for two of his biggest movies, one of which being Sudden Death, and the other one being this movie, Time Cop.
In the year 2004, time travel is a reality.
You are charged with violations of TEC code 40.8, time travel with intent to alter the future.
And a crime.
It turns out going back in time is a pretty easy way to make money.
I think you got yourself a shipment of gold and you're taking to General Lee.
The
genie is already out of the bottle. The technology is there.
Now, one man.
You ever hear the name Aaron McComb?
Is about to take the ultimate power trip.
He's gonna be president.
You don't need the press. You don't need endorsements. You don't even need the truth. You need money.
But to enforce the laws of time.
Are we still together in 10 years? Am I dead?
One man is determined to stop him.
I cannot go back to save her.
This scumbag is not going back to steal money.
Stay here, Walker. My future, you're dead.
I think you planned too far ahead.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Ron Silver.
Will you get him?
Mia Sara.
Which, right away, the thing I noticed upon revisit, and I think I talked about this with you, Cargill, you don't see a single big studio name in these credits. Like, it was eventually, I believe, distributed by Universal, but it was not produced by a big studio. Which is pretty fucking remarkable, because this feels like, in scope, and with all the effects going on, and with the way it's shot, and the way this feels like the biggest movie Van Damme has ever done.
Yeah, it's 90s as fuck. It gets a lot of production value out of this movie, despite the fact that everything is so contained, mm-hmm. and it probably is a much lower budget movie than you'd think. Himes gets a lot of production value out of it. He was always really good at that.
Yeah.
He really does. His movies always look really slick and really good. And dealing with a big science fiction concept like time travel really does kind of step this up and make this feel like it is Jean-Claude Van Damme's biggest movie. And I believe it is his biggest hit.
Yeah, I am pretty sure when I checked the numbers on this, this made the most money of any Van Damme movie. I will say it's appropriate that you mention that about Himes, because he is somebody who was actually a DP. In fact, serves as his own DP on this movie that he also directed.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he also the DP on Sudden Death as well?
He may have been. That's entirely possible.
And he's a good DP.
Yeah,
he's very good. He gets great shots. This is a movie that's very interesting to talk about, because it is one of his more entertaining films.
And what I never knew, I've seen this movie probably 10 times, I never knew this was based on a comic book. Even though it's right there in the fucking credits, I guess I missed it every time. This is actually based on I believe it was Dark Horse comic called Time Cop. I know zero about the comic book, but since you're more of a comic book guy than I am, I was wondering, do you know anything about this?
No, I had never heard of Time Cop. But then again, at Dark Horse is always weird. It was very aptly named, and they had some very cool properties that became big, and a lot of stuff that didn't. And the way that they got away with it was they were doing a lot of mostly black and white comics. Mm-hmm. They were doing a lot of stuff that was very risky, but didn't cost as much money as the color printed comics. And so they could get away with smaller print runs, and they could get away with more interesting material, and didn't need big IPs to drive them. Sometimes they would. They did, you know, they were most famous for initially doing Alien versus Predator. The first time we saw aliens and predators actually together was in a comic book in the early 90s. So
technically it was in Predator 2, but
no. We saw the alien skull in there with the Predator, but we didn't act, and that triggered this. But the first time we actually saw alien xenomorphs and predators fighting one another was in the comics. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, eventually it bled over into nigh unwatchable films. but this is interesting. This is a really entertaining movie, but don't go into it thinking about the time elements of it.
You should have to say that about every time travel movie.
They didn't. No, there are time travel movies where they really put thought into it, and then, you know, through writing or whatever, it, you know, just doesn't totally work. Like, you can go, well, technically, since this happened in this, and since it's a time travel movie. Because the problem with, I've mentioned this before, the problem with time travel movies is, every audience member, the minute they sit down for a time travel movie, they instantly believe that they have a degree in quantum physics. It's like they've watched 3 seasons of Rick and Morty and have been handed their diploma. They believe that they understand how time travel works. And so since it's time travel, you can fudge it, because it's like, well, what the fuck? We're just storytelling here. Here, they break their own internal logic quite a bit, and it just doesn't make any fucking sense at times. But you know what? You go with it because it's still an entertaining fucking movie.
Yeah.
The thing is there's two or three things that they do in terms of storytelling where it's like, well, why did you do that? Because this movie would be much more entertaining if it were consistent with itself and these weren't hard decisions to make. You just decided to do it this way, and as a result, you make your own time travel not function. There's only one part of this movie that, if it stuck to its own rules, wouldn't exist, and that's the opening sequence. The opening sequence doesn't make any fucking sense once you get to the end of the movie.
That being said, one of my favorite openings of any Van Damme movie ever. Like, we open on, it's Gainesville, Georgia. I believe it's 1863. And there is a military convoy moving through, and there's just a man in the road, and it's raining. And they're just having this conversation where he's like, I'm just a friend of the Confederacy. And they're like, well, then can you step aside? And he's like, yeah, but I know you're carrying gold, and I'd be much obliged if you give it to me. And they're just kind of like, it's the Once Upon a Time in the West moment, except with dialogue, where it's just like, you know, a shootout's coming, and they're just building toward it and building toward it. And when it finally happens, this dude whips out two automatic, what I can only describe as laser guns, and like plows through all of this Confederate battalion. And that's how the movie starts. I love that they establish immediately in this opening scene that like there is anachronistic shit going on. It's called Time Cop, so you should be on board for time travel from the jump.
But that scene is really great, and this is where the weirdness comes in, because at this point in the movie, there technically should not be that gun. That gun is from 2004. And this guy whips out guns from 2004 for this robbery. And then we then find out that, hey, it turns out we're in 1994 and you can't go into the future because the future hasn't happened yet. So you can only go into the past. Mm-hmm. And so we need to set up a regulatory agency to oversee this because people are already using this for their own gain. And that's fucking interesting.
Yeah.
The core concept of this movie is so fucking interesting. It is, we're setting up the FBI of time crimes.
Yeah.
And essentially just constantly having to go back and stop other people from fucking with time. And that's a really interesting idea. And the way they set that up. And then we go into meeting our protagonist, Jean-Claude Van Damme, once again, with a fully American name for, you know, no apparent reason.
Although, okay, we talked about this last week about how, you know, and again, nod to How Did This Get Made for introducing this to me. The metrics of a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, the questions that you need to ask for every Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. And the one we didn't actually touch on last week in Bloodsport, but is addressed in Bloodsport, is how do they address the accent? And they do in this movie, sort of. His wife in this movie is played by
Mia Sara.
Oh my God, 80s heartthrob.
Who has not, despite this movie taking place 10 years after Ferris Bueller's Day Off, has not aged a fucking day.
No.
Like, she looks like she just walked off the set of Ferris Bueller's and walked right onto Time Cop.
Oh, she's so radiant, she looks like she walked off the set of Legend. Like, it's crazy how beautiful she doesn't age a day. But she says something to the effect of, you know, with your accent, it's hard to understand a word you're saying. So they address that he has an accent. They don't really, like, at least in Bloodsport, you see a scene where his sensei is meeting his parents, and he's like, you came to America to work at a vineyard, and his parents have that accent. And you're like, okay, that's how he's in the States. This one, they're just like, yeah, we know he's foreign. And that's as much explanation as we get. So it's just like, okay, I guess everyone's just fine with it.
They're just fine with it. Put him as one of the top agents at a top secret American government agency.
Now, when this movie starts in 1994, he hasn't actually accepted the job yet, so he's just a Washington DC cop but what we find out from the Senate judicial session or whatever, the special, what do you call it, the oversight committee, is that the person chosen to oversee the newly formed time enforcement commission,
who volunteers.
Oh, no. The man who's actually put in charge of it is Bruce McGill, Matuzak. Bruce McGill is one of those character actors that I swear to God is in so many, like, he's one of those guys that will just follow you around if you start watching a lot of movies that guys like us watch, he will show up in literally everything. But the senator that decides to oversee this new commission is
Ron fucking Silver.
This is the question I feel needs to be added to the survey, which is the villain great? Because as we've said time and time again, a great villain will elevate a bad movie to the level of great movie. And Ron Silver, as the senator, as the greedy senator who starts fucking messing with the timeline himself, oh my God, choice. Like, Ron Silver was fucking amazing. Like, I love him in everything I've ever seen him in. It's
he's
spectacular.
He's so good at chewing up scenery.
Oh my God. Like, he has an eating disorder where all he can eat is scenery. It's crazy.
But here, he's actually a really kind of, like, his motivation is super shitty. It really is one of those shittiest villain motivations ever. And yet he owns every moment of it. Like, he just, there's a great moment. Like, there's a moment where he has slammed one of his henchmen's head against a window and broken his nose. And we see him later with the broken nose, and he's totally kissing the boss's ass. And Ron Silver just looks at him and goes, "Look, if you're going to be chief of staff, you can't be such a sniveling fucking wimp."
He said, what he says is, "You're never going to be my chief of staff if me slamming your head against a wall makes you a sniveling worm."
Yeah.
So fucking evil. And like, he says this after Ron Silver basically slams a guy's head up against a wall, comes up with a different plan. That guy says, "That's perfect." And he goes, "No, it's not. It's not fucking perfect. It's just what we have to do." And yeah, it's like, he doesn't even like his own plan.
And the thing is he's telling his henchmen not to fucking suck up to him. And that's kind of fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really great character defining moment, which is almost too good for somebody whose plan is to go back in time so he can raise enough money to be run for president.
Yeah.
Like, that's just like, it's like, it was almost there. Like, if he were going back in time and fiddling with the time stream to make elements more palatable for him to become president,
yeah,
would make a hell of a lot more sense than, "Oh, he's just, I'm going to need money and not enough people, even though I'm insanely popular in this one timeline. Nobody's donating money to me, so I'm just going to go back and steal it."
Yeah, no, that's the thing. At its heart, what this movie is really about is campaign finance reform. Because if not for the fact that Ron Silver's whole plan is that he's going to go back in time and steal money for his campaign so that he can become president. Not that he's going to do anything to pave the way for him. He's not assassinating anybody, a political rival. He's the only person he decides to go back in time and assassinate is Jean-Claude Van Damme, because at some point he learns that Van Damme is going to be the time cop that causes him the most trouble. So he goes back to 2004, or he goes back to 1994, before Van Damme was ever a time cop, and tries to have him killed. Unfortunately,
it's before the time agency ever existed and before he actually became a time cop, so that portion of this movie doesn't actually make any sense.
Oh, you're going to go cross-eyed. You're going to go cross-eyed if you keep pulling at the thread of the logic, because it's not good. There's no real logic to pull from, which is why we get scenes. But see, this is the beauty of the movie to me, is we get scenes like 2004 Van Damme going back to 1929 and being there the moment the stock market crashes and his former partner is basically sitting there in the 20s with a paper from 2004 looking at the stocks and buying them in 29 so that when he goes back to 2004 he'll be a billionaire. It's again very low stakes on the whole evil plan thing, but Van Damme shows up to take him in.
"How you doing, partner?"
"Ex-partner.
Let me go, Max. I'm not hurting anybody.
Got to take you back."
This is something we talked about with Sudden Death, about how Sudden Death lacks the one-liners. It doesn't have those really punchy, you know, post-knockout, post-kill lines. And this one has a couple that I really like. And my favorite one is when his former partner calls these two, like, giant, like, weightlifter-looking guys, like circus strongmen, because that's the kind of bodyguards you would have in the 20s, into the room. And one of them goes, "I went 10 rounds with John L. Sullivan himself." Van Damme immediately knocks him on his fisticuffing ass and says,
"I saw Tyson beat Spinks on TV."
Like, fuck you. I know you're huge, but you're also huge and you're a good fighter for the 20s, but I can spin kick, and that's something you've never seen before. And also,
you know, we just told you 5 minutes ago that doing anything can cause ripples in time, so kicking somebody's ass and speaking future speak, totally not going to fuck up the time stream.
This is true. No, I didn't even think of that. Like, stop making references to future shit if you're
not supposed to cause. If we're gonna spend an hour dissecting this movie, we're gonna talk about all the great stuff, but we're gonna talk about the fact that the time is a mess here.
I feel like you're suggesting that Time Cop is flawed.
I'm suggesting that Time Cop's temporality, the way it deals with time travel, is flawed. It's a very entertaining movie with a very interesting structure that does a lot of very cool things. Like, there's a great moment where he kicks 1994 Ron Silver, and 2004 Ron Silver is across the warehouse from him, and he's kicked him and cut his cheek bloody, and all of a sudden we have this great effect of new 2004 Ron Silver getting a scar on his face.
That's great.
And that's fucking cool. This movie has a lot of cool stuff. But so they do that, and then they have other problems with the time stuff, and it feels like they sat around a room and said, what cool stuff can we do with time? And then it's like, okay, well, if we do that, then, well, no, because we have to do this. Like, we have to have Jean-Claude Van Damme kick ass in the past, because that's much more interesting than putting Jean-Claude Van Damme in a situation where he has to be very careful not to fuck anything up. So he has to be very careful while fighting. That's not interesting at all. What's interesting is him doing what he does in every other fucking movie.
First of all, you've just accidentally created the best tagline for this movie I've ever heard: kicking ass in the past. Like, go put it on the poster. You've got my money. I'm in the seat.
He kicks ass in the past should have been the tagline for this movie.
I agree 100%. But yeah, you're right. Like, he should have to match. That actually would be kind of interesting if he had to match the fighting style of every person throughout time that he encountered, because then you got a little bit of a blood sport thing going on where it's like everybody he encounters has a different fighting style, and he has to kind of Bruce Lee, be like water, conform to the situation.
But you also have to be careful not to hit them too hard or hurt them too badly, because if you hurt them in a certain way or humiliate them in a certain way, you can change the direction of their lives. Like, so you have to be very careful in trying to. What I would find much more interesting in this 1929 is him trying to avoid any conflict whatsoever, not being seen, not interacting with anybody, not changing the course, you know, this whole kind of Sound of Thunder effect. That would be interesting. Like, what, and especially in the situation where you've got this guy who doesn't give a shit about the ripples, who's going off and trying to contain him. That's the more interesting thing, because we don't spend too much time traveling through time. So that would make for an interesting thing, and why he's such a good cop, because he knows how to conform to that time. And then and that would lead to this struggle of what we really have, which is when he has to go back to 1994 and he's really struggling with not changing anything, but he has to, because his wife was killed in 94. And what frees him from it is ultimately discovering that my wife didn't die in random violence. My wife was killed by time travelers. So that was never supposed to happen to begin with. So I'm totally free of these bonds. But they kind of go, it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. The audience aren't really thinkers, so they're not going to think too hard about this, which I guarantee you some producer fucking said. By the way, speaking of which, we haven't mentioned who one of the producers on this film is.
Yeah, Sam fucking Raimi.
Surprise? No. Sam Raimi always does really interesting shit and doesn't, you know, just goes and produces really interesting ideas. And I guarantee this was one of those that he helped develop, because it's such an interesting idea. And again, like, I'm bashing the time travel in this movie because I want you to think about the time travel in this movie, because seriously, rewatching this movie and thinking about the time travel, you see just how many times they're like, fuck it. Because they get to a point where they're just like, fuck it. Yeah. The end of this movie, they're just like, yeah, fuck it. And we'll get there. But how screwy the time travel is actually allows you. I have headcanon on this.
Uh-oh.
The headcanon is.
Here we go. Does it have anything to do with his haircut? Because that is the headcanon if I've ever seen it.
No.
Okay.
No. The headcanon, my headcanon for Time Cop, is that since this is a government agency and it's run by the government, and the government has all these, you know, various regulations and are often overseen by goons who have no right oversee it. Like, this entire agency is overseen by a senator.
by a junior senator, like a brand new, like wet behind the ears.
Well, junior senator doesn't actually mean wet behind the ears. Junior senator means you have served fewer terms than the senior senator.
All right. I mean, set parliamentary definitions aside. I just mean he's a brand new fucking senator.
Yeah. So, but he's a young senator, and you know, as we're acknowledging now, we've got senators on oversight committees about science who don't fucking believe in science. And they're like, all the science I need to know, I learned right here in the good book, Bubba. And I'm not fucking kidding.
No, I know you're not. I mean, it's a nightmare world we live in.
And so imagine one of those Goombas fucking overseeing a time travel division. And then you get the idea of why the time travel division really doesn't always get things right and really doesn't know how things work and have fucked with time so much and have been restructured by all the ripples that they've created by their own time travel that they're just kind of fucked up and they don't actually know the rules because the rules keep changing every time they fuck something up. And so my headcanon is they don't actually understand the rules. They think they understand the rules because of how previous fuck ups have changed the time stream. But since they established that anybody that wasn't time traveling, this is where it actually breaks. Anyone who isn't time traveling doesn't remember the changes.
Yeah.
Even though memory is really just things being written onto your physical body. And it's clear that Ron Silver could get a scar from something that happened in the past while he was there. So wouldn't memories then be burned in as well as you're changing things and the ripples are happening?
Will you leave those threads on the sweater where they belong? You keep pulling at them. That's going to unravel. This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have time travel.
Although I will say this, and I do feel like I owe you an apology because the disparity of fandom between the two of us for Jean-Claude Van Damme, at first I thought was going to be an issue, but now what I realize that it has led to is what is becoming my favorite part of every single one of these episodes, which is where we play script doctor on Van Damme movies.
I will say last week was all you. I was defending Bloodsport, and you were the one who wanted to change that storyline.
I agree, because it's fucking rubbed off. This how I would better write a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie by Brian Salisbury, Miss Clark's third grade class.
I will just point out that as much as I may kick a few of these movies in the balls,
spin kick them in the balls,
I never say, you know what, this would be a better movie with a different martial artist.
This is very true.
No, I'm fine with Van Damme doing this. And I like Van Damme and Time Cop. This, by the way, is up there with peak likable Van Damme because this Van Damme is interesting. This Van Damme is damaged.
Van damaged.
Yes.
And you stepped in that one, my friend.
Oh, I was actually setting that one up, and then you just yanked it right out of my mouth. It's like I was eating a burger, and you said, it's my burger, motherfucker.
If you don't take the easy ones, they might not be there in the future or the past.
I know, but no. Mia Sara is so good in these opening scenes that she humanizes him so much. Then we do something we almost never do in a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. Put him up against a second female. There are two females in this movie that are pivotal. And there's no romantic element in that. It's just a buddy cop movie at that point.
Yeah.
And he's very likable. He's funny. He's well-intentioned. We give him multiple characters to deal with and see how he deals with them all differently.
Yes.
Which is very different than a lot of other Van Damme movies. This character does have legitimate depth to him. He does come across as great. I think that Van Damme totally does every... This is, of the three films we've talked about this month, he is firing on all cylinders in this movie. He's just... You get him as a cop. He makes sense as a cop, and he makes even more sense as a fucking time cop. And they never tell you that he's the best time cop there is, but you fucking know he's the best time cop there is. You just can tell by his swagger and the way everyone deals with him and the way he's likable to everybody. He's the best goddamn time cop the TEC has. Without them ever going, you know, there goes the best time cop the TEC has, dude, which they do in a lot of other Van Damme movies where it's like, he really is a great fire marshal. How do we know? Because he screwed in a fucking light bulb that he pulled out of his ass.
How many fire marshals does it take to screw in a light bulb? Just one Van Damme. That's yes. all. I am good at jokes.
Although, another Van Damme-ism, going back to that movie, they do point out that not only is this an explosive, but it's C4.
Yes,
because we have to point out that it's C4. And what is C4, Brian?
It's the most powerful plastic explosive known to man.
I thought that sounded familiar. So yeah, C4 makes an appearance in here again. Because Peter Himes just loves C4.
Yeah,
it is just he just loves how explosive it is. but no, Van Damme totally works here. He totally just hits it, and he's really likable and makes. His character makes really good choices, and when people get the drop on him, it's because he's a good guy, not because he's an idiot or because he's made some kind of stupid mistake.
Yeah.
So all of the character stuff in this movie, which is weird to say.
You're saying it. I love that you're saying it. It's coming out of your mouth, and there's nothing you can do about it.
No. The character stuff in Time Cop is superior to the time stuff.
Yeah.
And that's great, and that really works. And as bad as the motivation for Ron Silver's villain is, again, he's a good character. Like, he just plays it well and is likable, and some of the choices he starts to make halfway through the movie make much more sense about what he's doing. So it is, like, again, let's go back to, making a better movie. I would have loved it if, he were getting beaten in the polls and as a result, he was having problems raising the funds, and that's why, and it's just about funds, and he just needs to get that money. The donations aren't coming in for some reason or another. There's somebody else who's significantly more popular. And so that's why he's got to go back and alter this one little element of him.
Wait, that's exactly what it is.
No, he's ahead in the polls. He just needs more money.
No. They talk about how he's tracking well with certain groups, but that he's still way behind. And
he then says, I'm 28 points ahead in the polls.
Right. Okay. But I think when he says that, this is where the time shit really starts to fuck you up. Because I think when he says that, it's after he's pulled all of the shit to get the money. And it's like now he's 28 points ahead because he says in this movie, which is very fucking weirdly prescient, to win the election, all you need is television. You don't need, you don't need the votes. You don't need this. You don't need anything. All you need is television. And starts talking about how they need to put somebody in the White House who's so rich he doesn't have to listen to anybody. And it's just like, that didn't work out either. But no, okay. So moving down our Van Damme checklist, we've mentioned that he definitely has somebody to avenge because they show up and straight up murder his. The murder of Mia Sara in this movie is pretty fucking brutal because they shoot Van Damme. He's wearing I don't know why they wouldn't have known this about him. It's 1994. You're going back in time to assassinate a cop. He might be wearing a vest. Shoot him in the head. I don't know. I guess that's what you get for sending a villain back in time who looks like a giant bird. Not so much going on upstairs. But they shoot him, and they take Mia Sara into the house. By the way, the not-so-well-kept secret at the beginning of this movie is that she's pregnant because she keeps saying, like, there's something I need to tell you, and he keeps having to rush off. And then they blow her up in the house. Like, it's a pretty fucking severe, like, thing to happen, and you can understand why Van Damme would want revenge. But the interesting thing about this movie, as opposed to the other Van Damme movies where he has somebody to avenge, is that he is bound by his own law to not seek that revenge, because if he were not as good a time cop as he is, if he weren't on the straight and narrow, he would totally fucking go back in time and save his wife.
Which is what I find really interesting about his character.
But
what really works.
He won't violate the prime directive.
He's got a very real reason to want to go back, and he won't. And so when he objects to all of this personal gain, that totally works. You totally connect with that because he's not going to take a dime, and he's not going to let some other asshole take a dime from history if he can't go back and save his own wife.
Exactly.
Like that is, he's just not going to fucking take that shit.
Yeah.
He has something very real to go back and do, and just not going
to
do it.
If he's not allowed to do that, you're not allowed to go back in time to play the stock market, motherfucker.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting element to this film. And it's what really works about Time Cop and why Time Cop is so entertaining is because you really do buy the character, his arc, what he loses and what he gets back. In fact, one of my problems with this movie is that I feel it cheats him at the end. This movie fucking cheats Van Damme's character in a big way that I don't think is fair. And it is one of those like sticking points with me in Time Cop.
Go for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm here.
The end of Time Cop, of course, he fixes time. We'll get into that in a minute, because how he goes about doing that is actually pretty fucking badass. But he comes back. And as I mentioned before, Ron Silver gets his face cut on one version of him, and the other one gets a scar. So clearly, we get there are physical ramifications for the things that happen that are immediate the moment they happen. So if you are back in time, it stands to reason that memories would be written to your brain as a result of the things that you changed in mm-hmm. time. So when he comes back from saving time, he doesn't get those memories. Everything's fucking changed. He doesn't know what fucking world he stepped into. The time agency is everything's back. His friend isn't dead. Everything's fucking golden. And he doesn't remember it. And so he doesn't remember that he has his own house that he used to have with Mia Sara and a child he doesn't fucking remember.
Yeah.
Dad, how did that hit you today?
Yeah, that was weird. No. I totally fucking agree with you there. It'd be like, dude, if Ron Silva's getting scars, you're getting memories of that kid.
Yeah. And he gets totally robbed in this movie that he goes back to a life that he's earned, but he's just lost 10 years of memories with this great family. That clearly a 10-year-old kid that loves his dad, a wife that loves her husband. Like, this is 10 years of that gone.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. I want you, the listener, to think. This is 2017. Think back to 2007 and imagine that you don't have any of those memories. You have a completely alternate history in your brain of a timeline that doesn't exist anymore. Of God knows what happened as a result, because there's a senator that went missing and the country would have lost its shit. Imagine if we woke up tomorrow and all of a sudden Ted Cruz had vanished. And
yeah, that'd be real tough. Yeah, I don't know what I'd do.
No. How much would this country lose its shit that just a senator was gone? Was it terrorists? Was he involved in something shady and ran off? Is he living on an island, you know, out in the Pacific somewhere? Like, you think that the hunt for D.B. Cooper was a big fucking deal. We would still today, you know, we would still 10 years later be talking about Ted Cruz conspiracy theories. Like, that's huge. So when he mentions that name at the end of this movie, yeah, of course he immediately goes to that senator, because, you know, it's like mentioning Hoffa. Like, it's like, what happened to Hoffa? Like, you know, I'm talking Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah.
Like, you just fucking know. That would be that. Imagine if a senator just vanished. He's got 10 years of this alternate timeline. What is his timeline even fucking like now? And he doesn't get to fucking know. Like, he just doesn't, and he doesn't remember his own kid. When he pulls up, he doesn't know his kid's fucking name.
Welcome back to episode 12 of the Ted Cruz Conspiracy Files. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury. Today, we're going to be talking about which island in the Bahamas we suspect Ted Cruz is living on. No, goddammit, it's junk food. Van Damme, stop causing ripples in time. This is junk food cinema. Goddammit.
Star Grove.
I'll tell you one thing. One of the items on the checklist that we've talked about, of course, is does Van Damme do the splits?
Multiple times.
Not only does this movie feature arguably his best use of the splits, there is a not so subtle nod to his propensity to do the splits. In the opening scene with him and Mia Sara, they're in a shopping mall in DC. And at one point he breaks up a purse snatching. He's got this really flirty moment with her. Did you happen to notice what's hanging from the ceiling in this mall, Cargill?
No.
They are giant balloon characters. They are these people that are made out of balloons. Did you happen to notice these balloon people are all doing the splits?
No.
I don't think that's accidental. I don't think that was just mall dressing. I think that is a very specific reference to the fact that Van Damme is in this movie. But of course, we have to talk about the creme de la creme of Van Damme split scenes, which is, of course, when this is like the second time that Ron Silva has sent people to kill Van Damme in his apartment, which, by the way, I love broken as fuck Van Damme in this movie. 2004 Time Cop Van Damme, you know, when he's lost his wife and he's kind of lost everything that means anything to him, and he goes home and just watches, like, I guess in 2004 it'd be like laser projections of his home videos.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like electric car in 2004. Okay, I buy it. Time travel 2004. All right, I'll buy it. You know, walk in, lights come on. Television projects. Play the tape.
Yeah, it's still well, to be fair, you're in a room with one of...
In an era of time travel, we're still operating on video cassette. I love it. I fucking love it.
In 2012 to 15, I still had a VCR. So that, to me, as a...
We still have VCRs.
As a total Luddite, like, I mean, some people use the term tech hipster. I prefer the term Luddite because it's just that I refuse to move on. It's not for any kind of status thing. I totally understand why someone would still have a VCR. Like, that didn't bother me as much. But I just love the way Van Damme plays, like, broken Van Damme. Because you don't see that very often in movies. You know, he's usually so plucky. You know, he's like...
No, he wants to... And that's one of the problems with Van Damme as an actor. He wasn't as bad as Seagal, but definitely had the Seagalism to him of... No, I have to be the toughest guy, and I've got to have the prettiest girl, and everybody
I never want to play the bad guy. I think that I honestly think that No Retreat, No Surrender rubbed him so the wrong way that he never wanted to play villains again after that.
Oh no, I 100% agree, and that's I think that's wrong. I think he would have made like imagine if we'd gotten him as a Bond villain at some point.
My God, the one shining moment of that second Expendables movie is holy shit, this is what we were robbed of for years. You know what we need to do, Cargill, is go back in time and make Jean-Claude Van Damme accept more villain roles because, oh my God, him as a villain in the... He would have been a villain, I guess, in the Dalton years or maybe... No, he would have been in the Dalton years or maybe the early Brosnan years.
It's like one of the great mistakes of Street Fighter, of which there are many.
Name 17.
Yeah.
You could.
One of the great mistakes is not just having him play Guile, but not having him play M. Bison.
Oh.
I mean, Raul Julia, it was
Via con Dios.
But imagine Jean-Claude Van Damme in the height of being Jean-Claude Van Damme playing the guy that nobody can beat. And imagine watching some great character. Like, frankly, what I think they should have had, you know, rather than going with Guile, they should have had Ryu and Ken and focused on them. Mm-hmm. And their friendship and their shared master, and then both wanting to be the guys to beat Bison. And imagine Jean-Claude Van Damme as Bison.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been, like, no need for an explanation for the accent, motherfucker. Like, done. It is, I think, that, like, him in that suit would have been, and watching him kick the shit out of everybody with that smug look on his face that he used as a hero for so long, but using it as a villain would have been fucking fantastic.
Well, let's be clear. He never should have been a Street Fighter at all. He should have been in Mortal Kombat as Johnny Cage, since that game and that character were based on his character from Bloodsport.
Yeah, he would have been a great Johnny Cage.
In fact, that's something I should have mentioned on the Bloodsport episode. Hold on. I'm going to go back in time and make sure I say that on the Bloodsport episode. And I'm back. So the split scene that we're talking about is that the goons come and they try to kill him. And they're trying to kill... They must have gotten their weapons from Forrest Whitaker in Bloodsport because they're giant tasers again. They might be the same giant tasers that look like dustbusters that Forrest Whitaker was wielding in Bloodsport.
Yeah, it's another taser gag.
Yeah.
Because...
50,000 volts, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have to mention, again, that it's 50,000 volts, the same way they have to mention that it's C4. Like, there is... I feel like...
It's the most powerful taser in the world.
I feel like there are times where Jean-Claude may have been giving script notes, and he gives the same script notes on different scripts.
Yeah, well...
It's a possibility. Can I not defuse the bombs? It makes sense.
If you don't listen...
I'm a fire marshal.
Yeah, I know all the things about bombs. I was also on the bomb squad. I am a fireman. If you don't listen to those notes, he walks off, even if the notes make the movie worse. So really, you're Van Damned if you do, and you're Van Damned if you don't. You're welcome. I love the fact...
Dat cam.
You have to say 50,000 volts because otherwise people are like, that's just going to knock him out. That wouldn't kill him. That doesn't make any sense. But what I love is that during the course of this fight, in which there is simultaneously the worst knife fight you've ever seen and one of the best knife fights you've ever seen, because it starts off with him taking on a guy who has two knives, with one knife with sort of a valley in the middle of the blade, and he's just turning that knife back and forth and deflecting to... It looks ridiculous, but when they drop that and just make it like, you know, an under siege like knife fight, it gets really good again. And like I said, a lot of the fight scenes in a lot of Van Damme movies are legit good. At the end of this fight scene, he knocks over his water cooler and this guy tries to electrocute him, and he leaps up into the splits to hold himself up off the floor across the counter. The water gets over to the guy holding the taser. Electrocution. It's kind of fucking rad. Like, it's ridiculous. It is goofy as fuck.
You have to believe that he doesn't have rubber soles in his shoes.
We are definitely...
You have to accept that he would be lit on fire by the same, you know, stunning and killed by the same stunning electrocution that... was just meant to stun him, but yeah.
You have to be comfortable with the fact that we are inches away from seeing Van Damme's little Brussels. But the thing is, that's still like a great moment of like, this is what Van Damme does, and he's the Van Damme best at it, so we're going to let him do it. And this is, of course, after this moment is when we're introduced to Fielding, who is this, what do you call it, IA agent, Internal Affairs agent, played by Gloria Rubin, who... It's weird. She is his partner, but also investigate. Like, it's not the way IA actually works, don't think.
No, and her entire character arc is the messiest of the movie, because she's a bad guy. She's corrupt.
Yeah.
And then when we fix time, hey, we're all good because that guy never existed. You were never corrupted. It's like she was still a corrupt fucking cop who almost killed you.
But Van Damme is the one guy who sees the good in everyone.
Yeah. No, her arc doesn't make a lick of goddamn sense. It just doesn't.
Do you think we could use time travel to go back in time and convince George Lucas not to make the prequels? Like, do you think, because that's something I feel like I'd be using that time machine all the goddamn time for stuff like that. And I would irrevocably fuck up the future, because I would willingly go back in time and just movies that should have happened, I would make sure happen, and movies that shouldn't have happened, I would destroy everyone to keep from happening. Crystal Skull, all of the prequels, things George Lucas did not have his hands on. There's a lot of things that I would change. Michael Keaton as King Koopa. It would happen.
Again, you ripples in time.
I know, I get it.
Time ripples. I would not fucking stop Lucas from making the prequels. And you know how I feel about the prequels. But the prequels led to Rian Johnson getting a fucking Star Wars movie. And Rian Johnson directing a Star Wars movie is exactly what was supposed to happen. So, you know what? We had to go through these rough patches in order to get to where we are now. And so, you know what? Fuck yes.
Cargill, I have already acknowledged I'm the villain of this story. I am not Van Damme. I am definitely Ron Silver. By the way, Ron Silver might be the epitome of non-physical perfect matches for Van Damme. Because in Van Damme movies, you have two kinds of villains. You have the physical match for Van Damme.
Yes.
And the mentally superior match to Van Damme. You know, people like Powers Booth and Sudden Death. But Ron Silver, to me, is like the epitome of, if you're not going to face him like man-to-man, mano-a-mano fisticuffs, you've really got to bring it in the evil plot department. And I feel like the way he... And while you're right, his ultimate plan for himself is, you know, not the greatest. The way he fucks with Van Damme's life... Choice. Like, this guy really fucking has it on the ball when it comes to fucking with one person's life. Because when the assassination attempt doesn't pay off like it's supposed to, Ron Silva goes back in time and tells himself not to buy out of the company that eventually makes the time travel pods for the Time Enforcement Commission, so that then he can dismantle the time like, that is some next level fuckery, where you're just like, okay, I didn't kill you, I'm going to remove your agency so that you don't have a job, so that you can't fuck with me. Like, that's my favorite moment, is when Van Damme comes back from that jump, and the name of the company that makes the pods has changed, and has McComb in it, and he's just like, shit. Like, and he knows exactly what's happening. And Bruce McGill's like, oh, you got back just in time. We were dismantling the track. It's like, that is like super politics to me, where it's like, I'm going to leverage like my own private interests to work this around and fuck you over so that you can't mess with my plan. Like, that is super politics that he's crossed into. It's not even science fiction. It's just super politics. And I have to tip my hat to him. He's figured it out. He's figured out how to fight Van Damme if you can't fight Van Damme.
Yep.
And that's why he's one of my favorite of all of the canon of villains that Van Damme goes up against. And you're right, the scenery chewing that he does, and he's eating peanuts at one point in the back of this limo, and he's just chomping on them as he's talking. And, you know, he has this whole thing where in that scene where he's talking to himself, he shoots somebody and says, or he slaps somebody upside the face and says, "Never interrupt me when I'm talking to myself." Like, oh, God, he's so slimy. I love it so much.
He is. And he's great. And that... this is what elevates this movie and makes it rewatchable, are these two characters and watching them play off each other. It's really weird. I mean, I keep harping on these flaws because it's Peter Hyams' film.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of good science fiction. He's done a lot of good genre stuff. And to see him then turn around and make a film that just is like, fuck it when it comes to time travel. I think it's a great example of how careful you have to be with time travel. You just have to be careful and think through all the questions your audience is going to ask, because that's why we love time travel films. We love the logic flaw of it, because it is, time travel is the greatest science fiction logic puzzle there is. It's what reaction does this have if we go back and change this thing, and how does that affect, like, it becomes this big pretzel of logic, and you really need to think it through in order to have it function properly and be enjoyed by the audience, because it's why we want to watch a time travel movie.
Yeah.
And when you just say fuck it, it's kind of like, oh man, like, you just wanted to use it as an excuse for people to shoot at people and for Van Damme to kick some people. And frankly, the kicking in this movie is not nearly as good as he does in other films.
The kicking, no. I still think the fight scenes between, like, all the mercs that are sent back to kill him are really good. I will say that, speaking of throwing logic out the window and just saying, fuck it, the one thing that did bother me, and I know this is not going to surprise you, Cargill, but the one thing that did bother me about the ending of this movie is that we know by now that Mia Sara is pregnant. She's losing that baby. Like, throughout this whole climax, she's, like, falling off the roof, and she's, like, getting slammed around through windows, and, like, Van Damme carries her out of the building before it explodes, and wholesale drops her on her stomach. It was, like, making me so uncomfortable. I was like, she's losing that baby. Like, there's no way that kid, like, you know what's...
See, that's what you were thinking about, new dad.
Exactly. Like I said, it's not going to surprise you, but that kind of made the ending different for me. I'm like, maybe it's not his kid. Maybe that's why he doesn't remember, because she lost that baby. There's no way that she was able to carry it to term. That's crazy amount of trauma to subject someone to the first trimester to. Well, since
they
were still around,
they could have done it again. And there
I guess. But you feel like you would have remembered that too, but I don't know. I'll tell you... one thing that Van Damme would have used time travel for would be to go back in time and kill Hugh Jackman, because how desperately Van Damme wanted to be Wolverine is all over this movie. Not only is his haircut, I did some research, apparently his haircut in 2004 is directly inspired by what was going on in the comics with Wolverine at the time, but there's literally a scene in 94 Van Damme stops a purse snatcher by just holding up his foot.
What does it say on your boot?
Read it. Wolverine, between the lines. I should get the fuck out of here. Good.
And you read that, you watch that scene, you're like, why did he make him read the brand of boot? That's so weird. It's like, oh, because the brand of boot is Wolverine. Van Damme wanted to be Wolverine something awful. It's like, it's all over this movie. And I feel like that's the first thing Van Damme would be like, I have to go back in time and take out this Australian guy, Jackman. He's taking my roles. Meanwhile, I'm like, that's great, Van Damme. I'm going to use it to make sure that Dino De Laurentiis' Spider-Man gets made. So I'll see you later. I'm irresponsible. I'm the Ron Silva of my own story.
So speaking of Ron Silva, Ron Silva's ending in this, despite being really bad CG.
Which there are a couple moments, if we're going to acknowledge the flaws, there's a moment earlier where somebody gets their arm, like, frozen and then kicked off, you know, very liquid nitrogen, that just looks fucking atrocious.
Yeah, yeah. But despite the bad CG, it's really cool how Ron Silver bites it in this movie.
It really
is. The fact that he has summoned, and it's one of the most clever parts of the script, which is they keep setting up, you can't exist in the same space. No, the two matter can't exist in the same space. And then it feels like the movie doesn't even understand what that fucking means.
The hell you say?
Like, I mean, because at first you're like, oh, well, this makes time travel really interesting because you can't go back into the recent. You can't, like, there's an alternate version of this movie here that would be really fucking neat.
I feel like that could be the title to the segment we keep doing in every one of these episodes.
Well, no, but we're talking about time travel here. So let's, I mean, I've kind of fucking wrote a movie that involves time travel. I kind of like the thing and I like thinking about
this. Wait, Bagul was a time traveler?
Yeah.
That shit is not in the regular cut. That's a director's cut thing.
So there is they establish that you can't exist in the same space at the same time. So it sets up this idea that, oh shit, in order to have like an experienced agent who you would send back in time, they've at least got to be in their 20s or 30s, probably their early 40s, which means there's this whole block of time they can't go back to. So you can only go back like really far to change things. And that would be very hard to manipulate modern happenings. And that's an interesting concept. But then it's like, oh, no, you could totally go back and do that stuff. You just can't be near each other. So whatever you do, don't call yourself or visit yourself, because that would be bad.
Oh, that would be disastrous, Marty. You can't date your mom.
Oh, but shit. Van Damme can be like 2 feet from himself and can speak to himself. Okay. Well, then what does that fucking mean? It means you can't touch. If you touch, that fucks up the time stream. I don't understand why. I don't think the movie understands why. But fuck, when he calls up the early Ron Silver to show up and convinces him it's the other guy, and he shows up, he's like, what are you doing here, you idiot? We're going to die. And then Van Damme pushes him against the other one, and you have the moment of, no!
I would love so much if Van Damme, like the movie, misunderstood what that meant, and he does that, and like two negative magnets that just kind of move away from each other a little bit, like, oh, well, that was weird. Okay, now what? It's like, now, oh shit, that didn't do what I thought it was going to do. I thought you were going to melt into some kind of weird amorphous viscera blob, but apparently you just slightly repel each other. Fuck, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah.
That's the ending I would have liked. But
that ending is really interesting, and I really dig it, and I love that in terms of, like, he just vanishes from the time stream, and that's cool. I like that.
So we go back in time, we change the ending of this movie to where he does that. It doesn't work like he expects it to. They both kill Van Damme and they win. And then that sets up the spinoff sitcom, My Two Silvers, where it's like My Two Dads, except they're both Ron Silver. Guys, 6 seasons in a movie. We got a fucking winner on our hands here.
Winner chicken dinner.
Winner, winner chicken dinner.
And speaking of chicken dinners,
the junk food pairing? Is it time for the junk food pairing?
It's time for the junk food
pairing. I believe it is time for the junk food pairing. Now, one of the things you have to know about Van Damme is that as entertaining as his movie outings are, go onto YouTube and track down any, and I mean any of the times he has ever appeared in a commercial, because it's fucking magic. Like, Van Damme in commercials is almost as good as Van Damme in any movie you've ever seen him in. And I can't speak highly enough of it. One of those commercials that he did in Japan was for a chewing gum called Black Black. And in this movie, they actually pay tribute to it, because it's the brand of chewing gum that he chews whenever he gets into the little time pod. And they do this great juxtaposition where he's going back in time. He's done this 1,000 times. And the internal affairs agent, who's crooked, this is her first real jump. And so he's just chewing gum and in fact, one of the little tech guys says you'd have to shake him to know he's even awake. That's how calm he is. And meanwhile, the other chick's like losing her mind. But he's chewing black chewing gum as a reference to the fact that he's appeared in these commercials in Japan.
Is it a reference or is it
product placement? Yes, that is, I guess you're right. When you reference a product, it's just called product placement.
If they paid for it, like, it's entirely possible that might be, you know, how part of how they raised money for this movie, which, as you talked about, didn't, you know, may have been independently funded.
This was only the second Van Damme movie to ever make $100 million. So it is one of, it is like one of his very biggest movies, and somehow you don't see a single like studio. I mean, you have Sam Raimi as a producer. I'm sure that carried a lot of weight. You have Peter Hyams as a director, and this is a guy who made hits for studios before, but you don't see a major studio's name at the beginning of this movie, and that to me is really interesting. But yes, Black Black Chewing Gum is the junk food pairing for Time Cop, a movie that is like a mix between Time Bandits and RoboCop, but only if you're doing enough cocaine as Van Damme was at the time of producing Time Cop, because it's not really like either of those movies, but just forget I said anything.
There's never enough time.
Guys, we have run out of time, and therefore we have to wrap up this episode of Junk Food Cinema as part of our hashtag JCV December celebration. Thank you so much for joining us. I would like to remind you that if you want to hear the rest of JCV December or any of our older episodes, you can go to iTunes or our back catalog on Blog Talk Radio. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like it, and as I said, you want to see us continue into the far-flung future of 2004, 2014, even 2018, you can always go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema and pledge, kick a couple shekels in the hat so that we can keep the lights on. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Massawyrm. That's M-A-S-S-A-W-Y-R-M.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter, at BryGuySalisbury. You can also like my Facebook page, facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. But whatever you do, no matter what you're into, always remember, lay off the fucking candy bars. Oh, wait, no, that's terrible advice. Always, hold on, I'm going to go back in time and do a better line reading than that. Okay, ready? Here we go. No matter what other decisions you may make in your life, always keep your silver separated.